Okay, welcome back. Hope you're all doing well. Any questions or comments before we dive in? Okay, if not, we'll continue talking about switch cap converters. So last time we were working our way towards developing this charge vector analysis, which is really nothing more than average type analysis, but with some simplifications, some useful tricks that we can use when all of the waveform averaging that we're doing is voltages on capacitors, currents through capacitors, I should say. To motivate that, we've talked about some of these more complex switch capacitor converter topologies, something more than just a 2-to-1 switch cap converter. One that we'll use as an example is this Dixon converter, which I mentioned has been receiving a lot of interest in the literature of late. Relatively little on the standard Dixon, but a lot of different minor variants of it, adding example, a filter inductor at the output to get some regulation out of it, adding resonant inductors on some of the caps to reduce hard charging losses and give some favorable switching characteristics, and various other slight topological modifications. But this thing is emerging as a good candidate for some high step down non-isolated type applications. Able to, just from our idealized analysis, assuming all of the capacitors are infinite, suss out that this implementation that I'm showing here is a 6-to-1 converter. We can stack more FETs in this kind of series stack at the top of the converter and add more caps on alternating size to make it any higher step down conversion ratio. Drop some off and reduce it all the way down to a 2-to-1 if we want, in which case it'll become that same 2-to-1 ladder converter that we've seen before. So just looking through the idealized analysis, the way this thing works is kind of the top cap and the bottom cap are a little bit special. They C5 here in one interval is connected without another capacitor in series. C1 is shorted directly to the output in one subinterval. And then all the caps in the middle kind of alternate between being in series with the cap below them and the cap above them in the two subintervals. So easy enough to get the conversion ratio out of it, but the output resistance is a little bit more complicated to look through and not super promising to say, let's go through and look at each of these caps, solve the delta V on them, and then plug into our equation from before of hard charging these caps, how much loss do we get? So something that's gonna help us out is this charge vector analysis. There's some overhead burden on understanding the notation, but the idea behind it is relatively simple. So we're just gonna look at the normalized charges that flow into or out of the cap in every subinterval. So by that normalization, we are normalizing by the total output charge or the integral of I out over one switching period. What that does is makes it independent of operating point, but also makes it so that we don't really need to know precisely what any of these charges are. We can just take a guess at one, solve through the rest of the converter, get whatever the total charge at the output is and normalize it out of there. So we don't have to be real precise at knowing what any individual capacitor's charge is. So we set it up, we kind of find these charges. Once we found the charges through all of the capacitors, we can find Q out and normalize into this A vector, which has the normalized input charge, normalized capacitor charges, and normalized output charge in each subinterval. We also define this V vector, which is just the voltage on the capacitors at the end of each subinterval, again, sandwiched in between VG and V out, which don't change by subinterval, only the capacitor voltages need this superscript to denote what subinterval we're in. I'm gonna do a slight modification here that'll come up in a second, but I'm gonna make, not this one. I'm gonna say my V vector is defined with a transpose here. Because very shortly I'm going to multiply these two things together. And for that to work mathematically, I need V to be a column vector where A is a row vector. In terms of understanding, no different, but just so that I can multiply them together. Okay. And then we talked through the rules and did an example of this charge vector analysis rules to be able to solve these charges. We just need to keep in mind KVL and KCL, and that for all caps, the average current is equal to zero over one switching period in steady state. So that means the sum of the charges in that cap in each of the subintervals, they need to sum up to zero, whether the charges themselves or the normalized charges. So there are some reasons, for example, this hybrid Dixon that I mentioned previously, we would want to have more than two switching subintervals to get some soft charging and low loss characteristics out of it. And that's what's discussed in this paper down here at the bottom. For most of the pure switch cap topologies, all of these general ladder, Fibonacci, series parallel, Dixon, pure switch cap converters, they're generally considered to operate with just two subintervals at 50% duty cycle. So you start adding inductors in, there's not much reason to have any additional subintervals or any difference in the time of them. And if we just have those two subintervals, we know, okay, whatever charge goes into the cap in subinterval one has to come out of it in subinterval two for it to be in steady state. It's for each of our caps, ACI in subinterval one is equal to the negative of it in subinterval two. So we're gonna kind of combine this charge vector analysis here. I was talking about to find the output resistance of some general converter. One way that you might do it is apply a test source at the output and then find the ratio of that voltage to the current coming out of the test source with the input voltage shut off. Just a general way for any circuit, call this a black box, to find the Thevenin resistance of that circuit, just to apply a source at the output and look at the ratio of V to I. Kind of combine charge vector analysis with this understanding of how we can solve for R out. And one more thing on the next slide, and that'll get us to a way to use this charge vector analysis to solve the output resistance of any switch cap converter. So that next thing is going to be Telegen's theorem. One thing we did here intermediately was just look at an example of solving charge vectors for this 2-to-1 converter. Found that okay, the input and output, the ratio of them will give us our conversion ratio. How to solve output resistance, that's what we're gonna do now. Okay. So Telegen's theorem is actually more general than even circuits or electrical engineering, but we'll talk specifically about how it applies to circuit analysis. And it is general for any valid circuit. Valid has a bunch of implications. It means it conforms to KVL and KCL and is also complete. There isn't some section of it left off somewhere that we're not considering. So it's closed and connected. Then the sum over all elements in the circuit, all circuit elements, resistors, capacitors, sources, inductors, anything else, of the voltage across the element times the current through the element is equal to zero. And kind of makes sense intuitively. If we look at a circuit at any instantaneous operating point, we have to have power balance. Some things are supplying, some things are sinking. And instantaneously, those all need to kind of balance out. But power comes somewhere, goes somewhere, but it balances through all the elements. Okay. Need to make sure for this to work, passive sign convention is followed. as long as we define for every element the voltage across it and the current going into the positive terminal of our reference voltage. This works out. If we flip that anywhere, then we'll make one of these powers negative and this won't balance. It's just to keep consistent on sourcing versus sinking power. Okay. So that's Telegen's theorem, and we're going to be able to apply this and make some simplifications using our charge vector analysis to be able to solve the output resistance. So for us, we've got all elements now in our charge vectors. What do we have? We've got a bunch of capacitors and then an input source and an output source. So in our context, summing up the currents and the voltages would be kind of multiplying A times V. Only difference there is we've integrated those currents and normalized them, integrated to get a charge and then normalized by Q out, but a couple of linear operations, so that'll all work fine. So we're gonna multiply A times V and say that product has to be equal to zero in either subinterval. And that's why I needed the transpose here so that I can multiply these two things together. So for our two subinterval switch cap converter, A bar 1 times V R1 is equal to 0, and A bar in subinterval 2, bar in subinterval 2 is equal to 0. By Telegen's theorem. And with that, no reason I can't just add them together. Since they're both equal to 0, I can add them up, and that's also equal to 0. Okay. And then what I'm going to look at is I'm going to break this back apart a little bit here. So multiplying these things together, I'm going to get the sum over every element of this normalized charge that goes through the element in that subinterval times the voltage at the end of the subinterval. I'm going to break that back apart to separate out the input source, output source, and then this vector of capacitors in the middle. Okay. That'll look like, okay, at the input, I'll have VG times, call it AG or AN, AN. Through the middle with all the capacitors, I'll have A sub C 1, B sub C 1, the vector for all capacitors in both subintervals. And then at the output, I'll have the out times A out 1 plus A out 2. Okay, and what can we say about these things? So A out 1 plus A out 2 is Q out 1 plus Q out 2 divided by Q out by the normalization. So this is always equal to 1 by our normalization. Just the thing in parentheses. And then this over here is VG times our normalized input current. And we're going to be developing here and trying to use this for is to solve this output resistance. And in the process of solving that output resistance, what we do is short out, set the input voltage source to 0. So I can say specifically in the case when testing output resistance that this goes to 0. And just drop that term. Okay. We're not testing output resistance. It's still there. It is just VG times AN1 plus AN2. This whole thing is equal to zero for the rest of the equation. Okay, so I'm going to take that onto the next slide, and we'll rewrite it with this simplification, drop this term and set this equal to one. I'm going to go ahead and just move V out over to the right side of the equation. Okay, so now I have AC1 VC1 plus AC2 VC2. I really wish my pen would stop doing this. It's equal to minus V out. From that, let's make some further simplifications relying on our knowledge of how things are going to work if this is a two switching subinterval switch cap converter. So what do I know there? Since this is only the capacitors that are left in this AC vector, and I know that charge balance applies to all of them, means that whatever the charges are in subinterval one, the charges in subinterval two need to balance. So AC1 is minus AC2. So I can replace, say, AC2 is minus AC1, factor out, say, AC1 bar times VC1 minus VC2 is equal to minus V out. And then I'm going to make some substitutions here. So VC1 minus VC2, this is the voltage at the end of subinterval one, plus the voltage at the end of subinterval two in our slow switching limit. That is this delta V that we've looked at previously, how much the voltage on the cap changes when that exponential dies out and decays over time. So this is equal to delta VC for each of the capacitors. We look in that delta VC vector, any element in there, the ith one, so for the ith capacitor, this delta VCI is what, since it's delta V on a capacitor, then that's equal to the charge supplied to the capacitor over that amount of time divided by the capacitance. Simultaneously in our AC vector, just by definition, all of the elements in there are that same charge, but divided by Q out. That was the definition of what these A terms are, whatever that same charge is, and then normalized by the total output charge in both subintervals. Okay. So if I plug both of those things in, I can replace this VC1 minus VC2 with delta VC, and then replace that delta VC vector with each individual cap's charge divided by its capacitance. And then I can replace AC with charge over Q out. This is a little bit harder to write in vector notation because we haven't really defined what the vector of capacitances is. So instead, I'm going to write this as a summation. Since we're doing this dot product between a row vector and a column vector, it's just the sum of each individual corresponding element multiplied. So here, this V out is equal to, as we go through, it'll be the sum of the product. I belongs to caps. So for each cap here, we're doing the product of ACI times delta VCI. And then I'm going to plug in and say that looks like, in order here, QI over Q out times QI over CI. Simplifying a little bit and multiply these things together and say we've got QI squared over Q out times 1 over CI. Okay, so then the last thing that I'm going to do here is I'm going to divide both sides by Q out so that I can get a Q out squared in the denominator and make these things A again. And then I'm also going to divide by FS. So get over here on the right, minus V out over Q out FS is equal to the sum over all caps of QI squared over Q out squared, which will just be A sub CI squared times 1 over CI FS. Okay, so why the FS? Well, too many letters there. So divided by Q outs so that I can get this over into these A's and get rid of these Q outs. And I divided by FS because over here, Q out FS is equal to I out. So Q out is the integral of I out over one switching period. Multiply that by FS and we get back to current. So this means on the left, what I have is minus V out over I out, which is in this circuit here, what we wanted to find to get the output resistance. And that's equal to the sum over all caps of A sub CI squared over CI FS. So in the slow switching limit, my output resistance is just this expression. This is limited, so the process we went through to find this could be repeated, but the actual result here is for two subinterval switch gap converters. If we had more than two subintervals, things would have been a little bit more complicated here, where we couldn't just say VC1 minus VC2 is the only delta VC that has any meaning in the circuit, but we could still go through and solve for it. Okay. So that's our output resistance and one of the reasons why this charge vector analysis makes things easier is now once we've gone through this process, develop these charge vectors, we can just plug into this equation to get what the output resistance is without having to do any additional analysis. Okay. So we'll do that as an example. First, for this 2-to-1 switch capacitor converter, we already found these charge vectors. A sub 1 is minus a half, a half, a half. A 2, 0, minus a half, a half. Copied those onto the next slide here. And go through and solve quite simply. Call it this is AN. This is AC fly. This is A out. So this element in each is our only capacitor. So we pulled out the input source and output source, and our result in the end was just a function of the capacitor section of the charge vector. So we're really only looking at this element when we solve for output resistance in the slow switching limit. You know, sum or I is equal to 1-to-1 in this case, since we just have this one capacitor. ACI squared over CIFS. And here that's just equal to 1/2 squared over CFLYFS, or 1 over 4 CFLYFS. So for this thing, now we've solved our equivalent circuit, VG. It is a 2-to-1 ideal conversion ratio. As RO is equal to 1 over 4 CFLYFS, which is now through this charge vector analysis, the same thing we had gotten previously. So this is from a couple lectures ago. We went through and solved using our kind of component analysis of individual capacitors being charged by voltage sources and found the power loss and the input power. We found we had an REQ of 1 over CFLYFS over here on the left side of the transformer. When we reflected it through to get the output resistance, we got to divide by 2 squared, which gives us that divided by 4, or 1 over 4 CFLYFS. So exactly what we got here. So it looks like this charge vector analysis worked. Again, on this 2-to-1 ladder type converter, it's probably not so useful to go through and do this charge vector analysis. But when we look at something like this Dixon converter, it's going to be a lot less of a pain to do it this way than to go through cap by cap and try to find its losses in both subintervals. So let's go ahead and try to do that now. On this Dixon converter, do is we'll find these charge vectors and get out of them the conversion ratio and output resistance. So I'm going to just set up here A1, A2. Going to be some vector. We'll start by just kind of guessing some numbers and making sure they're consistent, and then normalize by Q out at the end. So we're going to want the input charge and then the charge through each of C1, C2, C3, C4, C5, and then the output charge. Okay, so process will be a little bit similar to what we did with the idealized analysis. We'll just pick some cap, give it some arbitrary number, go from there, see what happens. So I'm going to say in subinterval 2 down here that we've got a charge Q coming out of C1. Let's just call it a charge of 1 coming out of C1. And I can pick this completely arbitrarily, but I'll start with a 1 here. I know by charge balance that means I need a minus 1 up here in subinterval 1. So I have, let me change my polarities here. Make this, as I drew it, charge of minus 1 in C1 because it's coming out of C1 by a passive sign notation. 1 would be going into it. So I was going to say Q is equal to 1 here. That means that Q is equal to 1 going into the capacitor in this subinterval 1 now. And then that same charge has to flow through C2. It's the integral of the current, and these two share a current in this subinterval. That means I've got minus 1 in C2 here. Then I need 1 in C2 and subinterval 2 to make sure it balances. If I've got a charge of 1 in C2, means I've got a charge of minus 1 in C3. So when C3 has to be 1 up here, C3 is 1, means C4 is minus 1. And C4 has to be 1, means C5 is minus 1, and C5 has to be 1. So just starting from some arbitrary point, you can kind of piece through and say, okay, looking at the things that are connected in series and making sure that each of the caps balances, all the rest of these have to look like this. And then queue in and queue out, we can find by inspection. So our last thing here was that C5 is one in subinterval one. Means in subinterval one, I get a charge of one coming out of the input, minus one normal reference polarity. And then combining these things together, each of these three branches had a charge of one. All three of those end up going to the output. So this has a charge of three. So in this subinterval, I get three in the output slot. Subinterval two, the input's disconnected, so I get a zero here. And then I again have three branches, each with one normalized charge flowing through it. So I get another three here. Okay. So I sum those two up, my total Q out is Q out one plus Q out two. It's three plus three is equal to six. And then I can plug that six in and divide through to get my final A1 equal to minus 1/6, 1/6, minus 1/6, 1/6, minus 1/6, 1/6, 1/2. A2 is 0, minus 1/6, 1/6, minus 1/6, 1/6, minus 1/6, 1/2. And then we can read off here, what is the total input charge? Qn is zero plus minus the sixth, minus 1/6. Q out is a half plus a half is equal to one, which always should be by our normalization. So if we have six times as much charge going to the output as we're pulling from the input, then the current conversion ratio is 1:6. That means M is 6:1 or 1/6. Equal to the opposite. So this is indeed a 6:1. Looks like you have 1/0 in one of them. Yeah, a lot of my sixes as I rush through kind of got a little wonky. Sorry about that. So indeed, this is a 6:1 converter as we predicted from our idealized analysis way back here. But now that we've developed these charge vectors, we can solve for what is this output resistance much more simply. So I have these two things, solve for the output resistance. Expression there was we sum over all caps, A sub CI squared over CI FS. Let's say we use the same capacitance for all of these caps, all of them, it's just equal to some constant value C fly. Just to make notation a little bit simpler at this point. Get RO plus L is equal to, okay, we sum, we're going to square A sub CI for all of the caps. A sub CI is equal to 1/6. And for this two subinterval converter, it doesn't matter whether we're looking at A1 or A2 because they have to be equal and opposite polarity, and we're squaring it in this expression. So it's going to be 1/6 squared, and we've got five of them. And then each will get divided by CIFS. So it's going to be 5 times 1/6 squared over C fly, if they're all the same, FS is equal to 5 over 36, 1 over C fly FS. And that's our result when we're in the slow switching limit. Pretty easy. And that's sort of the advantage of this charge vector analysis. Now, both of these, what we did for the 2-to-1 converter and now what we've done for the Dixon, are the output resistance if we're in the slow switching limit. There, the losses are dominated by this charge sharing mechanism. If we go into the fast switching limit, this will no longer apply. So how do we do it in the fast switching limit? There we know that from our previous analysis that this charge sharing loss is going to go away. It's going to look like we have constant current everywhere. And so we can do a minor extension to the charge vector analysis to still use the same results from what we did previously and be able to solve the FSL impedance. And the idea is what we really care about, this output resistance in the fast switching limit, is dominated by just the actual resistances in the circuit. It's going to become some equivalent of all the R-ons and potentially ESRs and anything else in the circuit. So what we're going to do is define a new vector here, A sub R, and that's going to be equal to some QR over Q out, still a normalized charge vector, where Q sub R I, each element in this thing, is the charge flowing through each switch. Well, Q sub R I is the flux flowing through transistor I. When it is conducting. And you'll notice that on neither of these, we don't have this superscript. Because each transistor only conducts during one interval. So each one, either during subinterval one or subinterval two, the charge that goes through it is zero because it's off and it's some value in the other subinterval. So in this vector, we don't have to consider subinterval one or subinterval two. We just say whenever it is conducting, what is the charge that flows through it? So the way we're going to find AR is really just looking at what we've already solved, AC1 and AC2. And AR should always, every element should be some linear combination of elements in these AC vectors. Okay. And what I mean by that is we've really already in this process solved what are normalized charges going through every loop of the converter in every subinterval. And we just need to figure out where the switches are. Depending on where they are, they might see just one of these or some sum of a couple of elements in these AC vectors. For example, if I had a FET that happened to sit right here, it would just see 1/6 that would see the same charge that C3 sees. If I had a FET that sits somewhere here, it would see, it would be part of this loop that C5 is in and part of the loop that C3 is in, and C2Q, which would get normalized to 2/6. Okay. So all we have to do is really look at where the FETs sit in here and how many of these loops are they part of. And we can go through and solve what are all the elements of this just by inspection without any real additional analysis. Okay. So once we have that and we know what the charge is that flows through the switch in any of these subintervals, We know in FSL, if we're deep in FSL, that the current is approximately constant during the entire subinterval. We're switching so fast, so much faster than the time constant, that the currents just look like square waves throughout this converter. And knowing that, we can go through and just solve what the conduction losses would be. Okay, so we'll say A sub R is the normalized charge that goes through a switch. So I sub RI equals the transistor current when conducting. And I sub RI is going to be equal to the charge that flows through it, it's part of this vector, multiplied by, say, 2 over TS, half the switching period, twice the switching frequency, but 2 over TS, so we're saying that charge flows through in half the switching period, the time when that switch is on. Then say, okay, so the power loss in that switch is equal to I sub RI squared, again, because the current should be constant during that entire subinterval, times the on resistance of that switch. That is the instantaneous loss during the time when the switch is conducting. And we have that for half of the switching period. So this and this still both assume 2 subinterval C converter at 50% duty cycle. So that is what we'll do for all these pure switch cap topologies, but might move away from when we start adding inductors to the circuit. So then what can I do with this? Okay, I can write IRI as a function of this A sub R vector that we found. So given what we have here, to get from AR to I sub RI, I sub RI is this, QRI is just AR times Q out. So I sub RI is equal to QRI is ARI times Q out times this 2 over TS. And if I plug that in, I times Q out times 2 over TS squared R on I times 1/2 is equal to ARI squared Q out squared times FS squared from this 1 over TS, and then I'll get a 4 times 1/2, give me 2. Again, Q out FS is the output current. Finally, I'll say power loss in this switch is I out squared times, oops, I dropped R on I. Times A sub RI squared times 2 R on I. That's the power loss contributed by each individual switch. And for every individual switch, we've now got it as a power loss as a coefficient multiplying I out squared. So this thing here is some equivalent output resistance contributed by just that one switch. If we want to get the total output resistance in FSL, we just need to sum up the resistance contribution of every single switch. So now our R out in the fast switching limit is going to be, these are all multiplying out squared, so we just sum up all these resistances. So we sum over I belongs to all of the transistors. A sub RI squared times 2 times the resistance, the on resistance of that switch. Again, limited to 2 subinterval switch cap converter at a duty cycle of 50%. And this as is a canonical result that doesn't include ESR or the caps. Or any other resistances. We want to include the effect of ESR of the caps. We can do this exact same thing, but just for summing over all the caps, and we already have all of their charges in this vector. Just have to consider that now they can have current in both subintervals. So we'd sum over both of them. Alternately, if they're purely in series with the switch, we can just add them in here. Okay. So in the FSL drop down, we have to solve this new vector A sub R for what is the charge in all the switches. But once we've done that, we get the FSL on resistance quite easily. Okay. So let's, for example, apply that back to our 2-to-1 converter. So we solve the slow switching limit output resistance here for the fast switching limit. We would find A sub R is the charge going through each of these 4 switches. So let's call them Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. Whenever they are conducting. And it's pretty simple since we only have 1 capacitor, and in both of these subintervals, the switches that are conducting are purely in series with it. So in subinterval 1, we have Q1 and Q3 on. Charge goes through Q1, through the capacitor, through Q3 to the output. Subinterval 2, Q2 and Q4 on. Charge going between C fly and the output comes off the cap through Q2, through the output cap, back through Q4. So this is just going to look like 1/2, 1/2, 1/2, 1/2. All of them are equal to the charge going through C fly. Then RO and the FSL. Looks like sum for all transistors of A sub RI squared times 2 times R on I. I write that correctly. RI squared times 2 R on I, yep. A sub RI squared is 1/2 all the time, so we're going to get 1/2 times 4. That's all going to cancel out, assuming they all have the same on resistance. And we just get 2 R on. Somewhere in here, added our old result when we went through and used the current source type charging analysis to solve the loss of each of this circuit. Did this assuming we had some inductor at the output, but as we've noted, whether we're doing FSL or putting an inductor, we end up with constant current in each subinterval. We found is that the total output resistance looks like 2 R on. In this case, we had an RL and we included the ESR of the cap. we neglected those, we'd get 2R on for our R out. And same thing we just got. So it looks like that also matches with our previous results. So now we've got the SSL resistance and the FSL resistance. We've completely analyzed this. Again, we can kind of connect in between if we're not quite in the soft switching limit, not quite in the fast switching limit, combine as the square root of the sum of the squares. That's an approximation. It's not strictly valid in that intermediate region, but it's a pretty good approximation for most converters. Okay, so we're out of time, so I'm stopping the recording.